People Helping People, a program bridging the community with local organizations and nonprofits making a difference in the Bay Area. If you or someone you know would like to get your messages on People Helping People, please email us at contact@poly923fm.com or desipeoplehelpingpeople@gmail.com. Here are your hosts, Larry Walling and Greg Pirillo.
Hello and welcome to People Helping People on Bali 92.3 FM. My name is Greg with my co-host and friend Larry.
Good morning.
Good to see you, my friend.
Nice to be back. Good to see you too.
Always good to see you. We've been fortunate on this show, you and I, as two very, I would say, slightly above average intelligence, to be able to learn much about so many different topics where I almost feel like I'm just above beginner on so many levels and so many different topics.
There have been a lot of varied subjects that we've talked about.
Yeah, and you learn. You talk to people who are professionals that know what they're saying and they have done the research and they dedicate their lives to these things. We come away with it so much knowledge that we're able to at least give people a basic knowledge or understanding based on our own observations and our own experiences. And one of the topics that has been a huge, almost like a, I would say a black hole for a lot of people, because really it's so misunderstood and it's really not the most common thing for many years, and more recently it's becoming that way, is Lyme disease, right? So this... is something I've known about for years. I've had family members, you've had family members, but then it kind of hit really close to home for us.
Yeah.
And if you could just explain what happened with your daughter, Lindsay, before we introduce our guest.
Yeah, be happy to. Yeah, my daughter was diagnosed just recently, actually, within the past year. And she had been bitten by a tick in Santa Barbara during one of the wildfires over 15 years ago. She was sleeping on the floor. She got evacuated from where she was living and was staying at her boyfriend's parents' house and had gotten bitten in the head by a tick. After that, things started to go awry with her health. She did have a skin rash, which is one of the common signs, and it never went away. And headaches and things of that sort, and extreme fatigue. She was always very athletic, was into Krav Maga and CrossFit, all that stuff. But then she hit a wall, and she couldn't do it anymore. So fast forward to today, she's now on IV, going on. She will be starting now 5 days a week.
I'm
going to
share that whole thing in a moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's very important. Okay. But our guest today, it's the second time she's back in the studio with us, a very short amount of time, is Jo Ellis, who is with the Bay Area Lyme Foundation. She's our expert, if you will. Yeah. Jo, first of all, so good to have you back.
Welcome back.
Thanks. Jo. It's great to be back and see you both.
You were a joy to have the first time around, and it's not just because of your lovely voice. It was more because you had so much to offer us.
Yeah.
You really did help us, I know myself, understand a greater depth of what is happening with Lyme disease and really a lot of the things I was really misinformed about, even myself, who knows a little more than the basic and the average. So let's start by saying the most difficult question you're going to hear all day. What is Lyme disease?
Lyme is a bacterial infection which is transmitted to humans by being the bite of a tick that is carrying this bacteria called Borrelia burgdorferi. So the way that you get it is if you are unfortunate and you get a tick bite and that tick happens to be infected with this particular bacteria.
I always thought every tick bite, that should be one of those things I mentioned. I thought if you were bitten by a tick and it burrowed into your skin, you're going to have Lyme disease. I didn't know that until you said that a couple weeks ago. So now that we have the basic, the broadest stroke out of the way, I'm going to read what you sent me, Larry, from your daughter.
Yeah.
Because the thing that I find to be most confusing about Lyme disease is that every case I've heard or known somebody to get, so like cousins, I had a cousin who who's actually passed away not because of Lyme, but in the last year and a half, who dealt with it. And I had another relative who has Lyme, still living with Lyme disease. I've had so many people in my life. And I've seen so many different symptoms. And most of them live their lives normally, and then they have bad days or bad weeks, and they have stretches of time where they're really, you know, hurting.
Yeah.
This case, your daughter Lindsay's case, was probably the most, one of the more extreme that I've seen. So I'm going to read this, if you're okay with that, Joe. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So this is passed along from Lindsay, Larry's daughter, and give you an idea of what she's dealing with. So I wanted to give you all an update on my treatment. I'm on week 5 of IV antibiotics, liquid meds, and 38 different pills a day. I could stop there and be in awe of this because it's crazy.
Yeah.
I had my 1 month checkup and should be upping the IV antibiotics to 5 days a week. Currently it's been 3. In the next couple weeks after I get an EKG, I am very happy to announce that for the first time in 8 months, I was strong enough to hold a full glass of water and a book. Again, I'm stopping a second. Let that sink in. Mm-hmm. A glass of water and a book. Not enough strength for until this day, right?
Yep.
I haven't been able to read in months because I couldn't hold a phone or a book. My doctor said I'll probably have my IV line in and be on antibiotics through IV for 2 years, and progress will be slow. Holding a book, glass of water, water or a phone seems so small, but it's huge when you've lost it and finally get it back. Also, I haven't been able to get up a flight of stairs without stopping 2 times to rest in months. This last week, I got up a flight of stairs without a break. So this is an idea of how intense and how heavy this can be.
Mm-hmm. And it gets worse than that, believe me.
And this is a good day.
Yeah,
like she's coming out of it. So I can't imagine what it was like a week, 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
also now that she's getting this special kind of treatment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what does this tell you, Joe? What does this mean to you?
Unfortunately, Lindsay's situation is, we hear these stories almost every single day. I mean, on Wednesday night, myself and a bunch of my colleagues were down in Carmel, and we had 50 people in a room in Carmel, out of which a number of people stood up and they were telling their stories of Lyme and their struggles with it. One thing that I think it's also just important to point out is, you know, we're not really just talking about Lyme disease here. Lyme is just one of a whole different number of bacterial, viral, and parasitic infections that ticks can actually transmit to humans.
Hmm.
And one of the big difficulties and the big challenges for both patients, caregivers, and the medical profession is that sometimes people will actually get infected by more than one thing in one tick bite. And this further complicates what is already an extraordinarily complex and very, very challenging diagnostic landscape for everybody. And this is where a lot of the frustration lies, because we don't have great diagnostic tests currently available. And although, you know, if the disease is caught in the early or acute stages, people can actually get treatment and they can get better. If it's not caught at that this time, unfortunately, it can progress through different stages and end up, unfortunately, the way that your daughter is, Larry, where she's clearly debilitated and is in a later stage of the disease.
Like, to think that a thing like a tick bite could basically stop your whole life and put all your progress and your life progress on hold until you figure out what's wrong. Not even just how to fix it, but figure out what's wrong.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. I mean, how many times you were telling me they just didn't have any answers. It was just like, we don't even know where to begin with this.
Yeah, they couldn't figure out why she was sick. They couldn't.
Let's imagine any of us as humans who go to the doctor, you're not feeling well, and you go into that doctor, you think you're going to get an answer and leave there with a prescription that's going to tell you, like, hey, go ahead and go grab this medicine, and in 5 days, you're going to be like new again, or whatever. Even in extreme cases, in a month, you're going to be okay by doing this treatment, right?
Yeah.
You break an arm, here's a cast, in 6 months, you're going to be like new again. Imagine going in for that visit and finding out, well, we don't really know, and it might take us 10 years to figure it. Maybe never. You know, you're going to have to let us experiment to the point where we figure out what works. Is that essentially?
Yeah. One of my colleagues at Bay Area Lyme Foundation, she saw 17 doctors in 10 years before she got diagnosed.
Yeah.
So The thing about Lyme is, and it is, again, it's enormously frustrating. Almost every single case is different. Mm-hmm. There are generalities. There are things that we do know. The field is moving forward all the time.
That's good.
Doctors themselves are becoming more aware, especially out here on the West Coast. Bay Area Lyme Foundation actually funded a continuing medical education conference at Stanford recently, and we had like over 100 infectious diseases doctors in the room at Stanford. So, you know, wow. That we're getting to the point where we think that there's momentum building, but it is enormously frustrating because there isn't a lot of emphasis on tick-borne diseases in medical schools. And a lot of that is really because when you look at the science, without a robust and reliable diagnostic test for all of these different pathogens that can cause disease in humans, and each pathogen is different, so we're talking about a multiplicity of tests, you really have to empathize with the medical profession, because it's like the doctors, they want to have patients who are going to come in, and then they're going to run a test and say, oh, yeah, we know exactly what's wrong with you. Here is your medication. We know you're going to feel better soon. Imagine how unbelievably frustrating it is for them too.
Yeah.
So this is, we're all in this together when it comes to Lyme, unfortunately.
That's probably the best thing you could say about it right there, is that they're like having somebody like you or the people at the Bay Area Lyme and the people you met with in Carmel and knowing that there's now a community that's growing. And like even with Lindsay's case, right? She finally found a doctor that's actually like, this is what we're going to do. And we think this is going to work. Whereas for how long now she had been waiting for somebody to say.
And the odd thing about this is that in the short period of time she's been on IV, she's seen 4 or 5 different symptoms lessen considerably. Which is huge.
Yeah,
that's a very short period of time to see that.
Yeah. One thing that we should talk about, I think, which is very important, there's two things that I'd really like to talk about today. One is the symptoms of Lyme and the different stages of the disease, so that people listening can sort of have a little bit of a thumbnail about that. Mm-hmm. But also, I think it's really important we talk about prevention. Because part of what a Bay Area Lyme Foundation is really focused on, and my job is educational outreach for prevention.
Okay, yeah.
So let's just, if it's okay.
Oh, absolutely. Talk,
and it'd be great, Larry, for you to just sort of, you know, pop in here when I'm talking about the symptoms.
Sure.
So typically what happens is someone will get bitten by a tick, and they may or may not know that they've been bitten.
Right.
There may or may not be a rash, which is very often what a doctor will ask about, right?
A rash.
And so that's a problem, because something like around about 20 to 30% of people who get bitten by ticks, especially here on the West Coast, they don't develop any kind of rash at all.
Hmm.
So the doctor might look for that, and if you don't have it, they'll go, oh, well, it's not a problem. Also, the rashes can be very different. So very often the rashes that will get confused with either something like cellulitis or a spider bite, right?
Yeah.
So that's a problem. So think about that.
Okay.
One of the biggest symptoms that people talk about early in the disease, which is where symptoms come on anywhere from a week to a month after having been bitten by a tick, is a really, really bad headache. Like a headache like you've never
like
had before.
Like a migraine.
Like a debilitating headache.
Okay.
Terrible headache. Massive fatigue. Fever, chills, sweats, aches. And almost like a flu-like symptoms.
Okay.
So, and muscle and joint pain. Okay.
Wow.
You might or may not have a small bump or redness at the tick bite. And sometimes you'll have swollen lymph nodes. So you'll see that your body is reacting to something.
This is scary because
something's
a lot of this does
on.
Sound like flu symptoms.
Yeah, and this can happen days or weeks after the infection. And the really important thing is this may or may not come on with or without a rash, okay? So that's the tricky thing. And you may or may not have seen the tick, right?
True.
The second stage of the disease, which is what we call the disseminated stage, where the bacteria is starting to actually migrate through the body, can happen weeks or months after the tick bite. you can have an expanding skin rash, and you could actually have more than one rash. You could have like a whole constellation of them in different parts of the body. You'll have pain or numbness in the arms and the legs, and you might have really extreme joint pain. Again, profound fatigue, headaches, you might faint. One of the things that people will sometimes say happens is they'll wake up in the morning and all of a sudden one half of their face, all the muscle structure is just gone. It's almost like a Bell's palsy type thing. Mm-hmm. You might start having problems with memory, like, you know, and not just normal stuff, but like you might be driving to work and all of a sudden you can't remember how to get to work or not. And then the other thing that happens in around about 10% of cases is you might start having heart palpitations.
She's got that.
Almost like a tachycardia type thing. This is when the bacteria is actually getting into the major organs of the body, the heart, the liver, the lungs, okay, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Then the late stage of Lyme can actually happen or even come on months or years after infection. You'll have arthritis type symptoms. Oftentimes it will be in a knee joint, right? Okay. Or near the point of infection. Shooting pains, numbness, tingling in the hands or the feet. Stiff neck. Again, severe headaches, migraines. Lots of problems with memory, hearing, vision, chronic fatigue, problems with mood or sleep. A lot of people talk about depression and also inflammation of the heart or the brain.
The brain, she's got that too.
That late stage is very often where we will hear, unfortunately, stories like your daughter's, Larry, where it could be that they were bitten years ago, but because they never got a diagnosis and they were never given antibiotics quickly after that bite, the disease has been able to progress to a chronic condition.
This is frightening, by the way. When you started listing off those things that, and I mean that in like not so much like there's no hope way. I mean it in a way that's like there's so many things you have to consider. And when you're starting to think of like, something's been wrong with me, but I can't put my finger on it. I think a lot of people do this terrible thing, which we're all hypochondriacs.
Yeah,
we look online, we go on WebMD, and it's like, oh no,
it's not.
It's like, this is what I got. Yeah, you know, because you get nervous. Yeah. You hear bad headaches. You immediately think
everyone goes to Dr. Google.
I have an aneurysm. I have a brain tumor. Sure. Something. You immediately go to the worst. Yeah. But what happens is sometimes there are these things that are common in a lot of people. Right, a lot of people get headaches. Like sometimes a headache happens unexpectedly. I don't have headaches often. When I have a headache, I notice it because I'm like, oh boy, I never have headaches. Why do I have a headache? So immediately you start thinking the worst. But when you start having these things, like you mentioned, knee joint pains, depression, things that are just popping up, you have to be mindful of something. That's why we're educating people.
Yeah.
What it could be, not so much what it is, just go get checked. But then there's that fear. I'm going to go get checked. And like Lindsay and like so many other people, they're going to be like, we don't know what's wrong with you. Or this is what we think is wrong with you. And you're getting treated for something. I heard this one a lot. You're getting treated for something that you didn't even have.
Oh, yeah. Misdiagnosis is extremely key. I mean, I have a very close friend, San Francisco. She was on lupus medication for 2 years before she was diagnosed.
That's hard.
MS, you know, rheumatoid arthritis, depression. Guillain-Barre syndrome. I mean, I could go on and on and on. There are so many things that get misdiagnosed and then end up being Lyme. However, one of the things I think that's really important to communicate is that there are people who do get better. There is hope on the horizon. There are Lyme literate doctors out there who understand this and can really work with you and partner with you as a patient. But it's very much a collaboration because in some cases, there really isn't a silver bullet for this. And so that it has to be almost a little bit like a science experiment, unfortunately, which is not ideal, which is why Bay Area Lyme Foundation, you know, our mission to make Lyme disease easy to diagnose and simple to cure is what is our touchstone for everything that we do every single day. Mm-hmm. However, one of the things I do really want to talk about is prevention.
Okay.
Because I really feel like with Lyme, we could spend a whole week talking about all the different cases and symptoms and where the science is right now. But for people who are listening, people who you know are out there, they're gardening, they're recreating, trail runners, mountain bikers, campers, backpackers, hikers, all these kinds of things. I think it's very important to be cognizant of what you can do, how you can actively help prevent getting...
Yeah, the best way to deal with it is don't get it.
Exactly.
So we can help you avoid getting it. Yeah. Almost guaranteed.
Yeah, we want people to think about this in the same way they think about sunscreen and they think about not getting STDs.
Yeah.
You know, it's really got to start to get into the public consciousness in that vein.
Before you get into that, I want to tell you, on the East Coast, where I'm from, Lyme disease has been, it's part of the everyday vernacular. Like, people talk about it because it's such a common thing with high grass, woods, and a lot of the common things you hear.
Right.
Like, if you're going into the woods, don't wear long pants. You know not to walk in high grass or whatever if you're wearing shorts and no socks. Like, simple things. It may seem like a very general, but my point of that was, here, I feel people don't think about it. I remember doing things like going for a hike or something on the East Coast, and everybody's like, all right, tuck your jeans into your socks or whatever. Everybody's thinking that way because it's common. Here, I feel like people are like, what do you mean? Going on a hike,
that's true.
Put some long pants on. It's like, that's why? True, it's hot. Yeah, but no. Yeah. So I'm glad that you brought that up. Yeah. So let's talk a bit about that.
Okay.
Prevention.
So in terms of prevention, there are things that you can do. First of all, you can make sure that you wear insect repellent. Really basic. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Issue with that is if you wear sunscreen, which a lot of us do out here, you're going to have to reapply that insect repellent frequently because sunscreen can interact with that. We recommend that you consider using a repellent that has minimally 20% DEET. But if you're not really wanting to use DEET, there are alternatives out there. There's a lot of information on our website about that. Mm-hmm. Secondly, like you said, basic things, wear long sleeves and long pants, tuck your pants into your socks. But that's not really going to protect you because ticks crawl up. So if they get on your clothing, they're just going to crawl until they find a gap in your clothing. And then they're going to like crawl under your clothing and then find a warm, moist spot on your body to embed themselves. So it's really important to think about how to treat your clothing. There is a product out there on the marketplace called permethrin. Mm-hmm. It's a chemical. I know some people don't like chemicals, but it's worth doing a little bit of investigation. Yeah. Because if you treat your clothing with permethrin, you can get it in a spray can. It's super easy, costs about $10. And you can treat your clothing, let it line dry, and that will protect you against ticks, biting flies, mosquitoes, chiggers, all kinds of things for up to about 7 washes, right? Or you can buy clothing from any outdoor retailer that's already treated with permethrin.
Yeah. Right.
And when the ticks get on that clothing, they die. They die. It's not that they are repelled. It's actually embedded with this insecticide.
Yeah, but what the scary thing about this is it's people are always going to hear, like, how many people are going to really go out and be like, you know what, I'm going to buy this chemically treated clothing. We have to almost tell you, if you're planning on going hiking or on a camping trip, or if you're going to the mountains, whatever, maybe that's when you consider, at least at the very least, consider this. Right. You don't have to do it when you go to work, if you're not working in the backwoods or something, or by water. But like, if you're doing something that might put you in more danger, that's a good place to start?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of the work that I do is with park rangers, trail maintenance people, those guys. I mean, I talk to them and I say, treat your clothing with permethrin, and a lot of them will say, I'm pretty sure I already have Lyme. Oh my God. But anyway, that's the big thing. If you're not wild about chemicals, again, then you should really be spraying your clothing with insect repellent. Yeah. Okay. And there's also natural stuff out there. Lemon eucalyptus oil can be quite effective at repelling ticks, but you have to then reapply it very frequently. So that's the other thing. The biggest thing that you can do is if you have been out recreating, and here in California, we know from studies that we've done is that the majority of people who get Lyme or tick-borne infections here in California, it's through active recreation in the outdoors versus the East Coast, which is people get bitten in their own backyards. Yeah. It's more peridomestic. I think we talked about that last time. Mm-hmm. So if you're an outdoor recreator, you really need to get this in your noggin, okay? So the biggest thing is when you have been outside, you must check yourself for ticks every single day. And the most practical way to do that is when you're taking a shower at the end of the day, use what we call the fingertip test. Check all your nooks and crannies. Don't be shy. You know, if you find something or you feel a little bump or something that feels like a skin tag that was not on your body yesterday, check it out. And sometimes these ticks can literally be as small as a tiny, tiny, tiny poppy seed, like a pinhead.
That's crazy.
And you sometimes have to get a magnifying glass. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of my colleagues, she had one on her thigh and she had her husband look at it under a magnifying glass, and it was only at that point that he actually saw the legs of the tick.
That's unbelievable.
These things are tiny. So you need to commit to tick check every day, tick check your children every day, and if you find a tick, you remove that tick immediately, and we recommend that you save the tick for testing.
Yeah. Okay. So you know if that tick has...
Put it in a little baggie, a Ziploc baggie with a bit of moist cotton wool, cotton ball, and just leave it. And then if you monitor yourself and you start to develop symptoms, think about getting that tick checked because maybe that tick had a pathogen in it.
So we're into the last 5 minutes, as crazy as that sounds. I know. Well, this is the way it goes. We end up so deep in our conversations. I have one question before we kind of go into the final phase. Does it matter where you're bitten on your body? I remember you saying, did Lindsay get bit in the head? Was that what I
said? Yes, in the head.
Does it matter if you're bitten in the head or in the feet or whatever?
No.
It doesn't. So it's just going to manifest itself however, wherever it comes in.
Yeah, but the places where you should check that ticks most often crawl to and they are most commonly found are the following. The backs of the knees. Mm-hmm. The groin area.
Mm-hmm. Moisture.
Around the waistband, because they all hit a point of constriction.
Right.
Where your belt is. Your belly button. In your armpits, okay, the folds of the skin around the neck, the ears, and the hair.
Because they're going for, you said, warm, moist.
Yeah, they love warm, moist places.
So that the best thing you could do is don't sweat. I mean, that would be my best defense. Don't sweat, and you should be okay.
Now, your cardiologist wants you to sweat. We want you out there enjoying the outdoors.
Joe, can you tell us where people might get in touch with you or find out more information?
Yes, you can come to our website at www.bayarealyme.org.
L-Y-M-E.
Yes.
Not the fruit.
And if they want to reach out to, I'm sure anybody at Bay Area Lyme can answer questions.
Absolutely. info@bayarealyme.org. You can ask us questions, yes.
Okay, Larry, since we have 3 minutes, I'm going to allow you.
Well, Lindsay's listening to this show. She listened to the last one, and she was really impressed with it. Would you like to say a few words to Lindsay?
I would say to Lindsay and anybody out there who is suffering with Lyme or any of the other tick-borne infections, please know that you are part of a community and that there are many physicians, many doctors, many scientific researchers that Bay Area Lyme Foundation is funding around the country, and we are absolutely determined to complete our mission and make Lyme disease easy to diagnose and simple to cure.
Beautifully said. And I want to say something to Lindsay.
I was going to ask you.
This is a challenge that you will absolutely be able to handle, seeing as she had to handle a lifetime being Larry's daughter. So I know this is nothing.
So let
she
that
can't
encourage
overcome.
You, sweetheart.
Yeah, this is nothing compared to that. I totally kid. I have to say, this is like, it became very impersonal to me, obviously, just because of Lindsay's case. So I feel we're on our path. We're doing something, the three of us in this room, you every day.
And the science is moving forward rapidly. There are literally hundreds of people, researchers, postdoctoral researchers, labs around the country that are really working hard every day to get answers. We know people want answers. We're working on your behalf.
That's so good to hear that.
It
feels like, hey, we're doing something. It's not like this is just like a stagnant situation. It's actually getting more and more press. It's getting more and more
right, and it's needed spread. That.
Larry, did you want to do our last thought?
Well, we always ask, Joe, and you know this, if you're going to leave our listeners with one thought, what would that be today?
You're not alone.
Perfect. That was so
absolutely
precise.
Thank you for saying that.
We want to thank everyone for listening, and we hope that you've come away with more than you came into this show knowing, especially when it comes to sort of a mysterious illness like this, the Lyme disease, is something we all should learn about. It's something that we should now allow become a part of our daily routine and conversations. It's no different than depression. It's no different than all these other things that have kind of become common, right? We talk about them now.
Yeah.
Talking about it and educating is going to be the fastest path to defeating it. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Thank you again,
You're amazing. And Larry, you did well today. Very well done.
Ha!
Thanks for all your part in this and making this. You brought it to the table, though, so I thank you for doing that.
Well, you're welcome.
For helping us learn more about it. And if you want to find out more, again, go to BayAreaLimeFoundation.org.
BayAreaLime.org.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have put foundation. BayAreaLime.org. And we'll be back next week, another edition of People Helping People.